Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. I am Johnny. I am your host. I have a great show for you. Conrad Chacron, the drummer, is here, from Bob Schneider, from Banana Blender Surprise, from Bruce Robinson, from Earth, Pig, and Fire, from Kelly Willis. Tons of people. He's awesome. And we have a great conversation. But before I get to that, I have a big announcement to make, you guys. I have solidified my 2013 summer jam. It's Get Lucky by Daft Punk. Yep, that's right. And even serendipitously enough, when I was down at the pool earlier, like an hour ago, I experienced that song down there. It was fantastic. So yeah, what's your summer jam? Why don't you tweet it at me? I put a thing on Facebook today, said it. I put it on Twitter. I announced it to the world. You guys, I've got my summer jam solidified, locked in. Let's do it. I have a Skyrocket gig in a little bit. I'm going out to Steiner Ranch to play with them. And then tomorrow, not playing, but I'm going to go see Erin Ivey. She was on the show. Should be good. She's got a record release thing at Club DeVille. And then I think I'm going to go see Jesse Dayton, who's going to be on the show. I like him. I'm going to go see him at the Belmont. And then Saturday, I'm playing. Sunday, I'm playing at a brunch place. Skyrocket has a slow June, so I had to pad it with some extra gigs to make a little bread. So I'm playing like from 12 to 3 at this place called the Golf Range out at the Domain. So that should be cool, fun, sitting around playing guitar for 3 hours, and singing songs. Good time for me, good time for you. And don't forget, June 19th, we have a live podcast. I have Nakia, Jazz Mills, AJ Vallejo, The Boxing Lesson, Wednesday, June 19th, 7 p.m. at Strange Brew in Austin, Texas. If you're here, come out for that. And I've got some other shows I'll be announcing, but I got that one Sunday, and some other ones coming up. All right. My guest today is drummer Conrad Chacron. I've known Conrad for a little over 20 years, and I've never really had the chance to sit down and talk to him like this before. And we both talked about it afterwards and how cool it was. So once again, I'm really glad to be able to do this because I got to talk to him. You might know him from, I first met him, he was in the band Banana Blender Surprise, which was this crazy band that was like a moon pie eating, RC drinking, long show playing, incredible band that was fronted by this great guy named Dave Beebe, who I was also good friends with and am good friends with, I guess. But you all might also know Conrad from his work with Bruce Robeson, Charlie Robeson, Kelly Willis, John D. Graham, The Resentments, Mike Flanagan, Charlie Mars, Steve Poltz, of course I said Bob Schneider, Ian McLaughlin, NRBQ, and many, many more. Anyway, Conrad's a great guy. He's an amazing musician, and I really enjoyed sitting down and talking to him. We talked about Houston a little bit, and he actually helped me hit me to some Chopped and Screwed guys that I need to talk to when I go to Houston next time, which is good. But we'll get to that later. Here's my friend, Conrad Chacron. Is the bag packed and by the door? Is that the...
Pretty much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You got the hospital bag?
Yeah, I got it. Well, actually, that's a good point. I need to pack the hospital bag.
Yeah.
I don't have that packed yet.
I'm glad that you came to, like, the single dude with no children to fucking point this stuff out.
Maybe
have you taken the Lamaze? Are you into the natural childbirth? Is that the movement?
Well, we're into vaginal birth if it can happen. So as far as that being natural, but we are going to be in a hospital. And
okay.
My wife's an OBGYN. So,
oh, she is?
Yeah, so
I didn't know that.
She's way hooked up in the community.
Okay. I didn't know if it was like a South Austin, like midwife kind of thing, you know?
No, it's not going to be that way.
You're from Houston. Your parents weren't hippies or anything?
No, not really.
They were just musical?
Yeah, kind of. My mom's kind of a hippie, I guess, but not so much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hey, I saw you play the other night. You were great. I'm glad that you before.
I got to see two or three of your songs. You were great.
Thank you.
Are you playing again with us on Monday?
Okay, this is the thing, is I'm doing a live podcast where I'm interviewing people on the stage before you guys go on.
That'll be cool.
Doing this, yeah. Should be cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who are you going to interview?
A band called Edison Chair David Cotton and a special guest that I can't say just yet.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that David Cotton interview.
It'd be good.
It's a guy I'd like to learn about his inner workings for sure.
Do you not know him that well?
I know him. Yeah. Not that well.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think I'm trying to figure out, you said that you came to know me in 1991.
I think so.
I don't ever remember meeting you. I just know you.
You know what I mean?
There's a few guys like that.
Yeah. There's Johnny Gowdy. I think the first time I ever saw you play was in 91. You were playing at Zelda's in Love Tree.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. With Conrad Meisner, right?
Oh, yeah. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. Quite a long time ago. But then I saw you, Mr. Rocket Baby.
Right.
But yeah,
and then we did stuff when you were in Banana Blender Surprise. Were you in Banana Blender Surprise? When did that start?
Oh, that was my first real band, my first band.
Yeah.
That started in, I guess, 19... I don't know. It started before my time. They had a different drummer. I was like in middle school, and they started probably in like 1988. And then I joined up in like 91.
Wow.
So I was 15.
You were in high school.
Yeah.
And you were playing gigs doing the...
Yeah, I was playing in clubs starting at 15 with those guys. And
that's awesome.
My older brother was in the band. And so it's like, you know, band with my older brother and all of his friends kind of thing. So.
I remember your older brother.
Yeah, Gerard.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah. What's he doing?
He lives in San Francisco. He's got a family.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's going on with BB? Yeah, BB.
BB lives out in Marfa.
Right.
He's kind of taking over Marfa. He's on city council. He runs a taco trailer called Boys Two Men.
That is awesome.
It is awesome.
He's so awesome.
He started a drive-in movie theater out there.
And Earth Pig's out there too, right?
The pig is out there. He's been out there for a while.
Shit.
Yeah.
You see him often?
From time to time, not as often as I'd like.
Can you find that Earth Pig and Fire music anywhere?
You know what? I was looking for it last night, and I found it in a box under my bed. No, I don't think you can. I don't know where you can find it. I bet you could look it up and find it online.
Bring it up. When you sent me that Glue song, I just was like, God, he is so great.
He's so good. He's a true genius, I think.
Yeah. And weren't you in Shat Records too?
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
With Kevin McKinney and Brian Walsh. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It was amazing playing with all those guys. Because I would see them play when I was in high school, and then moving to Austin and actually playing with them was a total trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the sound of an owl?
I think it's a dove.
It's a dove. Okay. I don't know animals.
Definitely a dove.
My next guess was going to be a pig. All right, let's go. So you're from Houston.
Yeah,
I'm from Houston. Your family plays music.
Yes.
How deep in it were they?
Well, my dad was in the children's chorus and a version of Carmen in Oran, Algeria, in North Africa, in the 50s.
Is that where he's from?
That's where he's from, okay. Yeah. French Algeria.
Okay.
And that's about where his musical career stopped. And my mom, she would kind of sing, but that was about it.
Okay.
But my older brother, Gerard, he was playing guitar and playing me Beatles records from, you know, when I was a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, you picked up guitar first and then moved to drums?
Yeah, I started taking guitar lessons. I was six and just trying to play Beatles songs with Gerard. But problem was, he played guitar too, and he played it better. So I decided to move to drums.
That's a good idea.
By seven.
Yeah. You know. So did your parents get you a kit? Like, what was the...
They did. First we had one of those Toys R Us, like paper drum head
kits. I had one of those.
Yeah, it was pretty hot.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, my dad actually bought me a kit, an emerald kit, a pearl copy in emerald.
A nice.
It was really nice. From the drum shop. Do you remember the drum
shop?
Yeah,
the drum keyboard guitar shop. Anar worked there. Remember Anar?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anar. Wow. Anar was a longtime employee.
Nice.
Yeah. And so was his wife that he's married to now. Yeah, she worked there too. Remember the pretty blonde girl, Leslie, that worked at the front?
No, I don't remember that. Was this like when it was on Alabama? Way back then?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about when it
was a chimney rock or whatever on the freeway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drum keyboard.
When it was on Alabama, that's where I took my first drum lesson from a guy named, who I knew him as Mr. Brock. His name was Robert Brock, but then he became known as Bobby Rock, who played for the Vinnie Vincent's Invasion and then Nelson.
And in there, he was in that band... XOX?
Was he?
Something in Houston?
Know.
Yeah, I remember.
Possibly.
He was in, I can't remember the name of the band, but it was a band, I think, that like, you know, remember Dana and Linda from Velvet Hammer? Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, them.
Nice.
Yeah. God, it's like Houston, this deep Houston shit.
Seriously
Somebody out
deep.
There listening to this is freaking out right now.
Yeah, deep H-Town. So good.
I just got, you remember Ink? Remember that band? With Frank Bullington and
I don't.
Okay.
Might have been before my time. I don't know.
Eric Jarvis.
Yeah.
You know him?
Absolutely. Yeah.
He was a singer of that band.
Did you interview him?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
I did.
I got to listen to that.
He's a good guy.
He is a good guy.
So so you moved to drums, and then what did you... Gerard first got into Banana Blender Surprise?
How much older is he
than you?
He's
a couple years?
4 years,
okay.
I guess. But yeah, we would play Beatles songs together. And then my first gig was at my second grade pool party.
How was that?
It was great. It was with him and Jason, who we all ended up in Banana Blender Surprise. But that's where it all began, by the pool.
Wow.
It was pretty good. Good stuff.
Is there ever any Banana... Wasn't there a reunion at some point? You guys are we going to get back together?
2006, we did one. But yeah, I hope so. I'd love to. We're never in the same place.
Yeah.
I've kind of been the one that's screwed it up lately. Like they've emailed saying, "Hey, can you do a show?" I'm like, "Well, shit, I'm going to be on tour." So that's a shame.
Damn it!
I know it's not right.
Yeah, but those were epic shows. Well, wait, before we get to that, so what happened after the pool party?
And
you guys kept on playing, or
yeah, I would play. I would do mini concerts at school, like in third and fourth grade, where you would show up and display your talent to the kids. So I would
just
play.
You on the drums?
Just me on the drums.
That's
just
awesome.
The drum solo. It was awesome. I had those sticks that lit up at the tip, you know? And I would turn off the lights and play.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It was so nice. Yeah, it was great.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I brought the razzle dazzle.
Do you have video of that? Because you're young enough to have, like, video.
That's true. I wish I did. I don't think I'm actually, there is some. There's a bunch of Betamax tapes that I haven't, you know, looked at or tried to
man,
transfer.
You got to transfer that.
I got to transfer
for
that.
For your kids.
Totally.
For the boys.
I wonder if that stuff still works now, if it's degraded into nothingness.
You think your kids will, one guy will start playing, and then the next, he'll teach the other guy Beatles songs?
Maybe so.
That'd
Hopefully
be cool,
so.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be great. My plan is to surround my kids with instruments and just see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, see what they gravitate towards.
Do you play video games?
I don't. I used to, but I don't have time to do that anymore.
Because you're playing a lot.
I'm playing a lot, and you know, and I've got a child.
Yeah.
He's 18 months old, so...
Yeah, you can't be like, I'm killing dudes.
Yeah, exactly. Check this out. I got the high score, man.
Yeah. I'm hungry, daddy. Yeah. So you went on playing Beatles songs with Jason and your brother, Gerard?
Yeah, I did. And then, you know, I would just play in my room. I would, you
and
know...
And then concerts...
Yeah, mini concerts.
Yeah, mini concerts.
And then would play. I had a drum kit in my room, and I would like listen to Wings Over America and play the drums to that, or whatever I had in my my tape player, my cassette player, and
that's
play
interesting
along.
Because a lot of kids. Did you ever know a guy, Phil Hernandez?
No.
Drummer guy.
Who's
he
that?
Was in a band called Goodfoot, and he ended up being like a North Texas guy, but he was from the Woodlands.
Nice.
Anyway,
I don't know about that.
I knew him. I knew him when we were kids, I walked across the Woodlands with my friends on a pilgrimage to watch a sixth grader play along with Tom Sawyer. Like,
wow.
We went to his house. We're like, is Phil here? Like, <yeah. laughs>
That is so awesome.
We were like in eighth grade. We gotta talk to Phil. We gotta see what he's doing.
I'd like to see a video of that. What did you learn from that?
We sat there with our arms crossed. I learned I had to go home and practice because that kid really had his shit together, and he was like 12, and we were 14.
Nice,
you know. So yeah. Anyway, so your brother joined Banana Blender Surprise, and you were like in what?
Yeah, he started it with his with David Beebe and with right. Jason Barker and John Aminette, and then down in Houston, and then so they were in college, and their drummer Shannon Brown, great drummer. He was doing stuff over the summer in Austin. They were all in Houston, so they needed somebody to rehearse with. I was like, hey, let me rehearse with you guys. I can, I know all your songs.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, okay. So I did it, and it was great. It was fun. And then they had me play on shows with the other drummer, and we would trade off percussion and drums.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was fun. And then so then I was playing in clubs on the weekends at that point.
What clubs were you playing then?
Let's see. I played the Pick and Pack Ice House.
Oh, God, I love that place.
Love the Pick and Pack.
Me too.
So good.
It's gone, right?
Yeah, it's gone.
Oh, man. I had great times at the Pick and Pack.
The local Charm.
Oh, yeah.
Love
local Charm. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Telephone Road in Lawndale.
Yes.
So good.
Yeah, that place was great.
It was like one of the oldest bars in Texas. Like its liquor license was 00001.
Really?
Know? Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Amazing, you know. And we play at Fitzgerald's, of course, yeah. Zelda's.
Yeah.
Where else? I don't even remember.
That was a great place because you could get all ages in there.
Yep.
And you guys were a young band.
Mm-hmm. I remember that so well. They would give you a stack of tickets and then you had to promote it yourselves.
Yeah,
you know?
God. Yeah.
And you would have to pay money to play or some shit like that.
Yeah, I remember when I first did that thing, I was like, man, that was just a weird fucking concept for me.
It is a weird concept.
What they do is they give you a handful of tickets when you first started, and then you'd however many tickets you'd bring back, then they'd decide if you could play like on a Tuesday, because you'd start out on like a Monday, and then like if you never got paid.
No,
they were just making the money off of it, but they knew who was bringing the money and who they could exploit.
Amazing.
They still do that. It's just such a racket.
Do you remember the Thai guy? Brian, yeah. The Thai guy?
Yeah. Remember the stage was all ties at one point.
Yeah,
yeah.
Should interview that guy. I wonder if he's still around.
Yeah, I wonder what happened a lot. There were some characters that just hung out there, which I'm sure there are like at Saxon now. Like some of those guys are there when you show up to load in.
Yeah.
They kind of split when you guys start. There's some career
Saxonians, man.
Like, yeah.
I love those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those guys are real.
Yeah.
I used to rehearse next to there, and sometimes we used to go there and have a drink when we were bored during rehearsal. Kyle Schneider.
Nice.
And me and Einar. And the guys that are in there at like 3 in the afternoon are serious.
Serious business.
Serious business.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't like to talk or anything. They're just kind of there drinking their drink.
That would get in the way of the drinking.
Did you ever become a big drinker doing all this?
Not really. Nope. I mean, I probably would have if I could have, but I get real sick. You know, once I get to a certain point, I just kind of vomit and go to sleep.
Yeah.
So that's not that fun. So yeah. I learned that pretty early on. So I've never been able to go too deep in the drinking.
Yeah.
Or the drugging, really. So
that's good.
Yeah, so that's good.
It's great. It's great considering your dad and everything.
I can thank my physiology for that. It just gets me sick.
Good. So Banana Blender Surprise, you played with them, and then you graduated high school, and then what'd you do? Move here?
Yeah, I graduated from high school, and my senior year of high school, I was playing every week at the Black Cat with Banana Blender Surprise. So I was commuting from Houston to the Black Cat every weekend, which was pretty wild, you know.
Kind of
sacrificed my normal high school social scene to go play at the Black Cat every weekend, you know.
But were you cool with that? Because by that time you had been in the band for a little while, and once you got in the band, were you kind of like now into your more grown up friends and people you knew, and not so much in like stupid high school people or whatever?
Oh, I was thrilled to be, you know, in the band. Like, hey, you know, people would say, hey, you want to come to this party on Saturday? Like, no, I'm going to be in Austin playing at a club that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And I'm awesome. You know, it made me feel good.
Yeah.
And there was just this, we were building up a crowd at that point at the Black Cat, and it was super, super fun.
Tell me about, explain it, because I know about it, but maybe some for our listeners, it's cool to get all the different perspectives of people. That was a gig that you worked for whatever it was you got, man. Like, you went on stage, if you had to piss, there's, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how BB learned how to play drums. Maybe sometimes you might have had to pee.
Yeah, I mean,
you had to run back there. They'd make you play the whole time. Like, what? It was 3-4 hours. How long
would
was
the
thing?
We would play 10 to 2, no breaks. You know, and I saw a lot of weird things happen. I mean, there was, you know, people having to pee, people peeing on stage or vomiting, and you know, it was
well, then serious. The other thing is Dave Beebe's drinking like,
yeah,
how many RC colas would he drink?
Well, we would all be drinking RC all night, okay. But David, we would do a song called RC and a Moon Pie,
right?
He would, during the song, he would complete an RC and a Moon Pie, and on special occasions, he would drink multiple RCs or eat multiple Moon Pies.
I know. Which,
anyway, it was special.
I saw that go down a lot, and there was one point I remember one time. Didn't you guys end up like with an RC fucking magnet on the side of your trailer and stuff?
We pestered.
They took notice to you guys.
Well, we pestered RC so much. We wanted to be sponsored so bad or endorsed just to do it, you know, and they wouldn't. But we finally got them to send us some huge 6-foot RC stickers and a knee-high sticker. So on top of that trailer, there's a knee-high grape sticker, which
is awesome.
Pretty awesome. So we wanted to be sponsored by RC, but never could make that happen. That was their big problem. That's why they're not as big as Coke or Pepsi, is because they wouldn't sponsor us.
Yeah, guys. I mean, seriously, I've never seen anybody. And Dave Beebe said he told me one time that he wasn't fucking around, that he was real serious about his love for RC, that he would rotate the stock, and like if it was dusty at a place, he would rotate it out so it looked fresh.
We would search out the old RC and drink it, even though it tasted horrible, so people trying the RC would get the fresh RC.
That is awesome.
Yeah, we were serious. We were out of our minds. People assumed it was like, you know, even in some reviews, they were like, and they love RC, which is obviously code for something else, but
right.
It was actually, we were just...
No, it was literally RC.
Literally RC.
So, you guys... Once you, how long did you do that Black Cat residency?
2 or 2.5 years. Like it started on Fridays. We would open for somebody, and then we moved to Tuesdays or something like that. We took over
Joe Rockets.
No. I guess it was at that time. They were called Little Sister.
Oh, right.
And I think we took over their slot. So I think it might have been Joe Rockheads, and then Soul Hats, and then Little Sisters, and then ours. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
then once you moved here,
then I moved here for college. Went to UT.
What did you go to school for?
I took a year off between high school and college to play with Banana Blender. We toured around,
right?
Did a lot of touring, mostly in the Southeast, and then went to college and got a history degree.
Awesome!
But I was playing music the whole time. That was my job through college, and it's what I also love to do and what I ended up doing with my life. But you know, it's kind of how I made money and had fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm glad that you were able to do all that stuff. A lot of guys, maybe like me, made a choice and were like, I can't do it both. I gotta fucking be out there on the road living the dream.
Yeah. I mean, I was tempted, but I don't know. I was just determined to finish the degree.
So, what year did Banana Blender break up?
Let's see. I guess 95.
Yeah.
You know, everyone had decided, you know, I'm going to go to college.
Yeah.
Jason, the guitarist, went to med school. We were all, you know, going to go do our own things.
Yeah.
But we would play lots of reunion shows.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, something I should mention about Banana Blender is we started playing 4-hour shows. 4 hours was normal. Then our normal show would be 6 hours. But one time we did a 9-hour show from 5 p.m. to 2 a.m., no breaks.
Yeah. Where was that?
That was at the Continental Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I went to that. Or if I stopped by that, but I do remember that. I remember that.
Yeah, it was something special. But man,
how did that work out?
It was great.
Why did you guys do that? What were you trying to do?
It was David Beebe's idea, and he said we got to do it 5 to 2, no breaks, 9 hours. Come on, let's do it. I'm like, okay, we're all on board. Let's do this. So we played all the songs we ever knew.
He's almost got like this work ethic of like a 50s dude.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know what I mean? Like a your grandpa or something.
Absolutely.
Maybe your dad. I don't know.
I learned so much from that band and pretty much from David Beebe. I mean, he schooled me in all kinds of music. I learned a lot about blues music and all kinds of music from David. And then playing these,
it's almost like you got a double history degree: one in the history of music and then one at
exactly,
school. Yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty wild.
So he taught you a lot about music. So what'd you do after after Banana Blender. So you started playing with...
Then I had met Adam Bork, Earth Pig.
Right.
And I was playing with him, and Kevin McKinney joined up from Soul Hut. He was playing bass with Adam.
Right.
And I was fans of Adam's, and I was fans of Kevin's.
Kevin's,
so I was
just...
I was so happy to be playing with both of those guys.
Right.
You know, so...
And you guys did Earth, Pig, and Fire. I remember seeing that at Stubbs.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and we played the Black Cat for a while as well.
How was that?
It was good.
Yeah.
It was fun.
What, do you have any good Paul Sessoms quotes?
Yeah,
I okay, do. Give me one. I love a good Paul Sessoms.
Oh, God. banks. Don't use banks. No. You take all your money. Yeah. You bury it in your backyard. Yeah. Yeah. No. You know, you're a Jew, right? You're a Jew. I'm a Jew. We're Jews. You know, you keep your, don't give it to banks. No.
He wasn't Jewish.
No, of course not. he said some really funny stuff. Stuff I don't know if I should say here.
Ian Moore told me that he told him after his first show there that that was 78% good.
So, yeah, he always talked in percentages. He'd always give us notes that said, turn the guitar down 18%. Tell the drummer to play 22% louder. It's fucking genius.
Yeah, he's a character.
So
he was a character. What a great dude.
So good. He did tell us, he said, you know, you guys in Banana Blender Surprise, you know, you got to get more girls to the shows, you see. You get dudes to the shows. You get dorky guys. It's great. You know, I'm a dorky guy, again. But you need girls. He said, you know, you got to pretend like you have a big dick. You know. He said, Kevin McKinney in Soul Hat, small dick. No, I've seen it. No, small. But he pretends like he has a big dick. So lots of girls come to the show. Anyway, genius.
That is awesome.
It's really funny.
And
for the record, I don't think Paul Sessoms ever actually did see Kevin McKinney's penis. So
no, but I like
for the record.
I like that he would just claim things.
Yeah, that's he would just claim thing. Stuff. It was great. I miss that guy a lot.
It sounded like Martian when you said that to me.
Oh, yeah?
I could tell. Yeah, it sounded like something Martian would say.
So good.
So you played with Earth, Pig, and Fire, best name, and then Shat Records kind of happened after that?
Yeah, we would play every week at Antone's on Guadalupe and 29th.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, we're old school.
We're super old school.
Well, not super. There's other guys.
That's true. We're not
super old
school.
Guys that beat the hell out of us with the old school thing, because we are from Houston, too.
Yeah.
So
semi-old school.
Semi-old school.
Yeah.
But so that must have been, what, 95? 96? When did that place close?
I was playing there mostly, I think, 97.
Okay.
And I think they closed 98.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think. I don't know. Or moved, that is.
And then when did you start playing? What was your next...
Then I was playing with with Shat Records, Brian Walsh, the bass player, great bass player, played with Soul Hat, still plays with Soul Hat, fantastic bass player.
Do you play with them now when they play?
I do. I have been playing with them lately. Okay. Me and a couple other guys have been playing with Soul Hat.
Nice.
And it's a total thrill. But anyway, Brian Walsh was playing upright bass with a guy named Damon Bramlett, who's a fantastic songwriter.
Right.
And he asked me to play with them because they needed somebody to fill in. So I played with Damon and with Brian. And so that was kind of my first country gig. And that was a lot of fun. And it was cool to play with them. And we were playing every week at Stubbs Stubbs Happy Hour. And then through him, I got introduced to Bruce Robison and Kelly Willis. So then I would play with Bruce. Then Bruce had me play with Kelly. So I kind of got into that world. And I played with Bruce and Kelly on and off for like 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great. They're great people.
They're so great. I love those guys.
Yeah. Did you play with Sweeney when he was playing with Bruce?
I played with Sweeney a little bit. Yeah. At the end of kind of my tenure.
Good thing.
Sweeney's a sweet guy and a really good musician.
Yeah. What happened? Were you in like a band that Chuck Berry came through town and was like, hey, I need a guy?
Yeah. Banana Blender Surprise. he didn't pee on me, but he did smell like feces.
He did?
He did. like old man.
That's
weird faces.
Really creepy.
It was gross. But yeah, I was with Banana Blender Surprise, and it was after we had stopped playing full time, but we would play sometimes, you know, when we were doing reunion shows and stuff. Yeah. David Beebe was working at Rockefeller's, and his boss, Don Gomez, was like a promoter and would, anyway, he got Chuck Berry to play at Galveston Mardi Gras in 1998. And he, of course, he needed a band. So he asked us, and we said, yeah.
You know. You don't practice, right?
Yeah, we said, all the stories you hear are pretty much true.
Okay.
You know, it's like the same.
Tell the story.
So
what's the deal?
So the deal is we get, you know, we say, all right, yeah, we'd love to play with Chuck Berry. Great. What songs are we going to play? I don't know. We'll wait to hear from management. We finally hear back, learn the Great 28. Those are the instructions.
Okay.
Learn the Great 28. Learn all those songs. Show up to the show. That's it. You know, show up Galveston Mardi Gras. There's thousands of people outside.
It's cold as shit.
It's
usually
Galveston cold. Cold.
Yeah.
And Chuck's not there. It's showtime. Chuck's not there. Chuck is in Houston. We're ready to get on stage in Galveston. Chuck's at the airport telling the promoter, well, I'm here, but the money's not here. He's like, well, the show is in Galveston. The money's in Galveston. Use the Lincoln we rented you. And
all right, because you're supposed to rent him a car.
Yeah,
and
you
put
rent
the
him
money
car.
In it.
Right. So, but he refuses to even come to Galveston because the money is not at the airport.
Right.
So anyway, whatever, they work that out. He shows up with his briefcase and his guitar. Gets on stage. There's the two dual showmans set up for him. He just pulls his guitar out, pretty horribly out of tune, and we start playing.
No tuning it.
Not really.
He doesn't seem.
He
like
tuned
the nicest
by ear.
Guy. Yeah.
He wasn't that nice to us. I mean, I've heard lots of great stories. He was fine. He loved. We had Pete Gordon. You know Pete.
Yeah.
He was playing piano with us. He loved Pete.
Yeah.
And.
Pete from Continental Club Houston.
Yeah,
love Pete.
Yeah, love him. The dazzling Pete Gray. And for me, you know, I was 22, and I was so excited, of course. And in my mind, from a drumming perspective, I was like, man, you know, I'm going to swing this stuff like it should be swung.
Oh, yeah, you're going to do
those records, you know, I understand what's happening on those records, and I'm going to bring the real shit. But of course, I get there, and I start playing what I think is the real shit, but Chuck's like, uh-uh. So he's just banging his foot, going boom, 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 like looking me in the eye and banging his foot, that rhythm to pretty much every song, you know?
Yeah.
Forcing me to play that. My mind is just getting blown, you know?
Did you freak out? I mean, did you get like all like, kind of clammy and like, oh, fuck. Like,
yeah.
Sweaty, like hands sweaty and like, oh, shit. And,
absolutely.
Oof.
But it was still, I mean, so there was some, and he changed keys, of course, you know? During the middle of songs, and I've since heard the reason why he does that is because it used to be in his contract that if the band provided was not sufficient, then he would get extra money, and so he would just make it a custom to fuck up the bands intentionally and then collect that extra money. Yeah.
What a weird kind of headspace to be in when you're going into a gig. There's not a lot of he's not really there to express anything or like get anything out, or he's just there to get his money. And
he's there to assert himself and get his money and get the hell out. But it was really strange. And he had people. This was weird. He asked for people to. He wanted kids on stage. He said, "I want kids 12 and under," which is kind of strange to say to a festival audience, you know. And so, sure enough, parents start just handing up their kids onto stage. So then, soon enough, there's this big stage full of kids. You know,
and the old poopy pants guy,
and he went and like gave some boy a little kiss on the cheek or something, and then was walking around, and then went back to the same boy and kissed him. You know, whatever, weird stuff. But it was what it was. Like a lot of train wreck, but some serious greatness shining through.
You know,
like there was some.
Does he still have something going on? Like you back there going like, "Fuck, this is Chuck
absolutely."
Berry. That's why he's Chuck Berry.
Absolutely,
that's good. That's
you know,
good to know.
Rhythmically and melodically, sure. And you know, it's just. So deep, you know, there's definitely still something going on. So.
I mean, it must have been fucked up when you're, I mean, like a song like Johnny Be Good, you take for granted so many times, but when you're up there and you're like sitting behind the dude,
yes.
That must have just been like a weird apex moment of rock and roll that blew your fucking mind.
Absolutely. It really was.
I mean, seriously.
It was.
It blew my mind. I just saw you playing with McLaughlin.
Nice.
At the Lucky Lounge.
Nice.
A couple months ago.
Nice. Yeah.
It's another guy. But he's so nice, though. That's like a different kind of guy.
He's like the sweetest guy in the world. Yeah. But after playing with Chuck Berry, like, I don't think I've ever been intimidated by any musician since.
No, he's kind of like, he's the guy that intimidates Keith Richards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, he's the guy.
Yeah, he's the guy. You know? He's the guy that would make Paul McCartney stop.
I know.
Yeah.
And after that show, one more thing about that show. After the show, we got off stage, we're sweating. Chuck Berry went into his tent behind the stage, and we're standing there, and we're like, so we go up to his tent, and there's a cop there, and he said, excuse me, can I help you? We said, yeah, we'd like to say thanks and get a picture with Chuck. He said, okay, hold on. Goes in, into the tent, comes out. He says, no. We said, you know what? That's even better than the picture.
That is awesome.
That is totally awesome.
I bet it was disappointing right then, but then seriously, like 4 months later when you're telling someone, that's
a even
great
better.
Story.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Definitely rock and roll apex.
Shit, man. That's a pretty amazing moment.
It was heavy. But I've talked to people who've played with them since then, and David Beebe's played with them since then, and Alan Hill, bass player.
I love Alan.
And Scott Legan and NRBQ, he's played with him, and all have said he's been just great and happy and brought the rock and roll. So I'm happy that even now he's still bringing the rock and roll.
That's what I would want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you play with NRBQ?
Yeah, I do play with NRBQ.
You do play with NRBQ.
Yeah. And so it's a pretty crazy story behind this as well. So in 1994, I was 18, and we got an opening slot for NRBQ at Rockefeller's in Houston. And at that time we were all very into NRBQ, and I was very into their drummer, Tom Ardolino. And I kind of look like Tom Ardolino, which is kind of a funny thing, but, you know, in my teenage mind, I was kind of emulating his style. Like, I was kind of in a phase of
copying his thing.
Yeah, you know, like way, way far back in the pocket, swing kind of fills in odd places, you know, not understanding the depth of what he was doing, but kind of trying to emulate what he was doing. Right. You know,
but that's an honest thing to say. Yeah.
I think that was the deal.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good.
So we opened for them, and after we finished playing, we were so excited. And after we finished playing, we got off stage, and Tom Ardolino said to me, he said, you're the guy. He said, when I get too old, you're going to play in this band and send me the money, you know? And I was just so thrilled. I thought it was hilarious and, you know, just thought it was great. And then they played and they were great. And then we were going to go play with them the next night at Liberty Lunch. We were booked to play with them, open for them, so we drove up to Austin and we're setting up our stuff at Liberty Lunch for sound check, and someone came up to us and said, what are you guys doing? I said, well, we're opening for NRBQ. I said, no, you're not. I'm like, what? We drove from Houston, we're booked to play with NRBQ. I don't know if there was a contract or whatever,
right?
But anyway, we got kicked off the stage, so we said, can we at least stay and see the show? And they said sure, so we stayed and saw the show. Anyway, fast forward 13 years, I get a call while I'm in my car. And it's this woman saying, hey, this is Conrad. I'm friends with Terry Adams, who's the leader of NRBQ. And like, almost drove off the road. What? You know? He said, well, he wants to talk to you and play music with you. What? You know? And so I got his number and called him up. And he said, yeah, you know, listening to this Banana Blender record, are you on track number 8? I'm like, I don't know, you know? So I had to figure out what he was talking about. I'm like, yeah, I'm on that track. He said, you want to come and play some with me and see what it sounds like? So that completely blew my mind.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Where does he live?
He lives up in
San Francisco.
In Massachusetts.
Oh, Massachusetts. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, so that happened in 2007.
Wow.
Yeah. So
how much do you play with them? What's the skinny on that?
Well, actually, I've been play with them about once every couple of months, go out and play a round of shows with them.
Okay.
And they're such a fantastic band. I'm actually taking a hiatus right now from touring, doing any touring of any kind. So
because you have a baby on the way.
Yeah, I've got a baby on the way. So, you know.
So you're playing, let's take this also. You play with, when did you start playing with Bob Schneider? When did that happen?
I started playing with Bob Schneider in March or April of 2007.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good gig to have, man, as a musician.
Man, it's
that's
great.
A musician. I don't know where that comes from. That's a great gig to have as a plumber.
It is a great gig to have as a plumber.
I mean, it is. That guy's working, you know, you get a thing. It's fun. He's got always got new songs. There's
yeah. You know, it's weird because he called me to play with him in like 1999. And I was...
Were you guys friends from the scene, from Black Cat? And
we were.
Just kind of Austin?
We just kind of knew each other.
Yeah.
From back in the day. And we would trade shows, Banana Blender Surprise and the Ugly Americans. And we would open for them. And they would open for us in Houston. And right. We just knew each other back
yeah.
then. So, yeah, it's sorry. Anyway, he asked me to play with him in 1999. And I was playing with the Damnations at the time. And I said no. And, you know, and... And then he kind of called me again later, and I thought, you know what, I'll check this out. You know, I like Bob. Bob's my guy.
Yeah.
I decided to just give it a whirl, and it's been so fun, you know, and I think it's made me a much better player, you know.
How do you, because he's always throwing curveballs, and you got to be on your toes?
Yeah, absolutely. He definitely does that. You know, there's no set lists, and stylistically, it's all over the map.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and I don't play salsa beats, but I've figured out how to get through a song yeah. playing my version of one, which I call a falsa beat.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or some Irish kind of song or funk song or hard rock song. It's just all over the map, which is really challenging because
yeah.
You really have to change things up.
Yeah, and people come too, so it's gratifying on that level. It's not like one of those things where you're beating your head against the wall trying to figure something out. You can actually relax because the people are there and you can kind of explore your thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It blows my mind. It's amazing how consistently Bob can draw and bring people, and you know,
it's because, you know, he really delivers.
He really does.
You know, he gives. If you're going to come see him all the time, he's going to bring you shit that's new that you're not used to, that you haven't heard yet.
And, absolutely.
And he's always entertaining. And
It's kind of, you know, and it's kind of dangerous on some levels, you know, like I think that's part of the appeal, you know, like I think at its core, rock and roll probably should be dangerous. At least that's why it started, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
And I think to a lot of people, going to see Bob is unpredictable
yeah.
know, and exciting.
Yeah.
And I get that. And I think.
Yeah. I like that.
That's part of why it works.
Let me ask you a question. Like, when you're out on tour, you guys record every show and you sell it at the end of the show, which
yeah.
is just fucking brilliant.
Genius.
Genius.
Horrifying. Genius. Yeah.
Does he ever come in to, like, in the morning, you wake up and he's like, hey, man, I was listening to the thing last night. Can you, and you're like, oh, no.
No.
Okay. Thank God. Because that would wreck me.
Every once in a while, though, he has come up and said, you know, like, did you hear our version of blah, blah, blah from last night? Like, of course I didn't. You know, why would I listen to what we know? But he's like, it's the best, you know?
Oh, really? Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So he does listen to him.
Sometimes he does. I don't know. Sometimes he does. Sometimes he doesn't. I don't
sure.
listen to them.
You don't?
No. No.
Well, you know, maybe someday you will.
I know. Maybe someday I will.
So how did you get hooked up with McLaughlin, with Ian, Mac?
Well, I was sitting at home and the phone rang. I guess this was about a year, 14 months ago. And it said, hey, Conrad, it's Ian McLaughlin. Oh, hey. Hey, Ian. You want to play in me band? Yes, I do.
Wow.
Yes, I do. And that was that. So
did you do a lot of stuff, or does he just mostly just play the Lucky Lounge?
Mostly we just play the Lucky Lounge, but here and there we'll get other gigs around and, you know, festival kind of things or private events.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's great. I love playing with Ian. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He's like the greatest guy. And
there's something amazing about him and inspiring to, I think, people as we get older, to know that further down the line, you can still play as inspired. You know what I mean? Like,
oh,
that
absolutely.
Guy, when he's playing, he's still like, you know, he's got that feeling you had, you know, when you were having fun playing music and just like into playing music.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he puts his body into it, you know, and he's
yeah,
not faking
I mean.
That
no,
at all.
No.
That's just what he does.
No.
It's great.
I remember seeing him like on this HBO thing where he was being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and playing on that thing. And then seeing him at Lucky Lounge like 2 weeks later. same guy, same kind of, you know what I mean? Same performance, same.
Absolutely.
It's not even so much of a performance. The dude is just in the moment of playing music. It was the same to him to be there with Ron Wood and the dudes from Faces, as it was to be with Scrappy, you know. And I don't think it was you then, but maybe it was someone else.
I don't know. It was.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was wasn't you? Actually. Maybe Darren Hess was playing that night actually.
Oh yeah.
Anyway,
it was. Anyway, but you know
he's
what I mean.
The, like, he's the real. Guy. He's the real deal. Yeah. You know. He's great.
Yeah.
Love that guy.
Yeah.
In fact, I just talked to him. He's in LA doing some session with Rick Rubin right now.
That's what somebody told me yesterday. What's he doing?
Man, I forget who it is.
Did you see that movie, This Is 40?
No, I didn't.
Man, just watching it at the end, Ryan Adams is playing and they flash to the keyboard player.
Yeah.
Mac. Awesome.
That's right. Yeah. I need to see that.
Surprising and exciting.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. I like that people love him. And because he's worthy of it, like a dude like that.
He deserves the love.
Totally.
He gives a lot of love, too.
What else are you doing outside of you're waiting for?
Yeah, I'm
waiting for your second child.
Yeah, waiting for my second child. And it's going to come any day now.
How's
really.
Your wife? Is she doing okay?
She's doing well. Yeah, she's working. She's real big and pregnant. You know, she gets tired.
It must be weird to be pregnant and be an OBGYN because you know everything that's going on.
Yeah, that's got to be weird. But I
mean, just too much. You know too much. I'd like to have a little mystery in everything.
Exactly.
I do.
Yeah. She knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah, she knows exactly what's going on.
She's acutely aware of what's happening and what could be happening wrong or right, you know,
right.
But she keeps it in perspective. She's amazing. But yeah, she's going to work until the baby pops out, which under any other circumstance would make me really nervous, but she's surrounded by OBs.
So right,
she could just kind of sit down and have a baby. It'd be no problem.
Yeah. Hey, you're going to have to get up off this table, man. I'm going to need this like right now. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else? Who else are you playing with? What else are you doing? What
are you doing? So yeah, playing some Bob gigs here and there. Just did a run with NRBQ. Playing some more Mac shows. I guess we've got a Mac show next Thursday at the Lucky Lounge. Really, I'm kind of, you know, I'm not going to be doing any traveling.
Right.
I'm kind of focusing on this phase of my life and my children's lives.
Because a lot of time in this period, probably you're not only there to help with the new one, but also to keep the other guy.
Totally. I mean, that's going to be a huge challenge. I mean, because he's 18 months and he's not really going to understand what's going on. So
no, but that's real cool because they'll be close.
Yeah, they will be close.
Yeah.
Will be.
Yeah. Make them listen to this.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry if I said anything bad. Is there anything that I'm leaving out? Anything I'm missing? Wait, Gavin DeGraw. Who is that guy? I know that guy. Who is that guy?
He's a popular singer. Yeah, I moved to New York and... moved to New York. Let's see. So,
when did you move to New York?
Yeah, there's a lot we haven't covered, John.
Well, let's go back. What's going
on? Let's go back.
What happened in
New
York?
Okay, so I was playing in the so big part of my life, like after Shat Records and after Earth, Big and Fire, and I was playing with Bruce and Kelly. I joined up with the Damnations.
Right.
And
I remember that.
That was a big deal. I was playing with them full time.
And you guys had a deal.
We did.
Mercury or something.
We were Sire Records.
Sire.
Yeah. So it was like my last year of college and I was playing with them and that was so great cause I was a fan of theirs. Like I would go see them play and I got to be a fan of their record live set. And then I started playing with them. It was so, so great. But, so I play with them my last year of college and then I graduated and then my first show out of college was on the Conan O'Brien show,
awesome.
Which was pretty wild. Yeah. That was good. But, yeah, we were on Sire Records at the time and like the full machine was happening, you know, the publicist and the A&R people on. You know, it was really happening, and the band was sounding great.
What happened?
You mean
did what? Something like okay? So the machine was behind it. You guys were in magazines.
So yeah,
great publicity. Conan.
Yep. So then I think you've probably heard this story or been a part of this story before.
You mean this story?
This story,
yeah, quote unquote. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is you know late '90s. Mm-hmm. 2000 or so, Sire merges with London. All of Sire's people that were on our staff get fired.
right.
get released. So then we're still on this label, but no one is behind us at all. No one's even working for us. They just have our record. And we've recorded another record, but it's just, it's in the can, but nothing's happening with it. It's just, we're just kind of in space. They won't even drop us. They won't really do anything with us. So,
right.
So we're in this state of limbo, record label limbo, which, you know, kind of happened a lot back then, I guess, during that time.
I think it just happens. Yeah.
Yeah. But, anyway, so, and also at that time I decided to move to New York, like after a while of, you know, I guess a couple of years playing with them full time, and things were kind of stagnant as far as the label and as far as our touring and stuff. And I,
what was going to happen in New York for you?
Well, it was also personally, I needed to go somewhere else. You know, I was 26 or something, and I'd been in Austin and Houston. That was my entire world. And I just wanted to do something else.
Sure.
You know, and I had, Adam Bork, Earth Pig, was up there, and I had some relatives and some other friends up there, and a couple of music connections. And so then I moved to New York in late August of 2001. So,
nice.
Yeah.
That was a bad time.
It was a bad
Where'd
time.
You move?
I moved to Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you moved there. September 11th happens. What happened then? Would you move back? I would have done that.
I didn't move back. It was weird. I'd kind of lied my way into a job, interior house painting, with this guy. And he was a real high end house painter. Of course, I never painted anything, but, so it was my first job, and I'm painting Frank Stella's house. Frank Stella's this like real famous minimalist artist in New York. So I'm at Frank Stella's house painting his wall, you know, totally weird.
Yeah.
And that was in the West Village. It's actually right there on Jones Street, near 6th and Bleecker.
Uh-huh.
It's actually the street where that Free Will and Bob Dylan album
covers. Right.
But anyway, so then, this one of the electricians came in. He said, airplane hit World Trade Center. I'm like, what? You know. And then I walked outside and just watched the whole thing happen, you know. So that was pretty awful.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I stuck around. And it was an interesting time to turn on your open for business sign in New York. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I can imagine. What did you end up playing much up there? Or?
I did.
Yeah.
I played with a guy named Warren Zanes. He was in the Del Fuegos with his brother Dan Zanes. But anyway, I played with him. He's great. I played with this band called White Mud Freeway. They were on Bar None Records. And played with Gavin DeGraw a little bit.
The guy who's famous.
Yeah.
What was his song? I know the name. I know I've seen it somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know the names of his. I think like I'm in love with the girl or I don't know.
That's not a good name.
I don't know. I haven't listened to his stuff.
Okay.
But,
you played with him?
I did.
But you didn't play with him when he was famous?
No, I played with him before he was famous.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you don't remember hearing the song going like, oh, I played with that dude before he was famous.
Yeah. yeah. And then I would kind of, it's weird. I ran into him randomly twice in New York. I was just walking down the street. Oh, there's Kevin. Hey, just totally random.
That's weird. Just
run into him in strange places. But anyway.
You played with the Gourds. Those guys were great.
I would fill in for Keith every once in a while.
Yeah.
I love the Gourds.
Tell me about playing with Steve Poltz.
Yeah.
That
guy's great. He's a genius. He's he's an enlightened being.
Oh my god. Yeah.
He's so good. I've actually never played live with him, but I played on one of his records, a double record, Traveling, I guess.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Recorded with Billy Harvey.
Uh-huh.
It's a great experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Billy was on Jay Leno the other night.
That's what I heard.
He was great.
Did you see that?
Yeah. He was playing this weird thing, it's like a kerosene can with four strings. Everyone's playing a square little guitar with a slide with four strings. Paul McCartney, every time I look on the television, some cool guy's playing some weird
guitar. The new end thing.
What is it? What is that called?
It's just like you said, square thing with four strings. That's the deal, man.
It's like some weird slide guitar ukulele.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. But he was great. Craig Ross was playing bass. You know Craig?
Yeah.
From, yeah.
Who was playing drums?
Somebody with a beard I didn't recognize. I was trying to see if I knew him.
Wasn't
or the
Donnie
keyboard
Wynn?
Guy. No.
Oh, nice.
No. No, it was a different guy. You a Donnie Wynn fan?
Yeah, I love Donnie Wynn.
Me too.
He's so good. Have you ever had him on the show?
God, yeah.
I got to listen to that.
Yeah, it was early on. It's really good.
Nice.
It's great. It just like starts and he's like just in the middle of telling these stories. It's awesome. Oh, fuck. Sorry. Sorry. Oh, Jesus. I forgot to. No. It's all fine. It'll be off of there.
That scared me. Can we keep that on?
I think we can, yeah. Yeah, I'll leave that on there just so people know what we were scared of. My voice came on because I didn't delete one of the tracks at the end of one of my last podcasts.
So weird. I was looking at your face and that happened.
My eyes came real big. I was like, no. All right, so now am I missing anything? We went back to New York.
We went back to New York.
Back to a dark time.
Back to a dark
NRBQ.
Time. NRBQ.
How do people find you if they want to get you to play drums on something they're doing? Or, you know, meet you.
You can find me on Facebook.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where can find me.
All right.
On the interweb.
You don't have like a Conrad Chicrone website?
I don't.
No?
I probably should.
Yeah.
Will you make it for me?
I will if the first thing that's put up there is just a video of you in the dark playing with your light up sticks and in fourth grade.
Yeah.
At one of your school concerts.
Absolutely.
Daytime school concerts. Okay, so I'm not missing anything. People can come see you play with Bob Schneider. They can see you play with Ian McLaughlin.
With Ian McLaughlin, yeah.
Lucky Lounge.
Yeah.
NRBQ, if you guys go out and play later on in the year.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah, absolutely. Check out NRBQ if you haven't. They're great.
Yeah. You know what I should? I've always heard of them and I don't.
So many great songs.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What kind of music is it?
Well,
Somebody out there is getting so mad at me right now.
It's, you know, old style, swinging, rock and roll, rhythm and blues. It's a little bit of jazz. It's fantastic.
Why did I think of them in the same kind of thing as, like, Bella Fleck?
That I do not know.
I don't know. For some reason, they were that kind of band to me.
Hmm.
Why? That's weird, right?
That is weird. But I'm going to think about that. That's interesting.
Thanks.
I've never drawn that line before.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, Conrad, thank you for coming. And people, if you want to enjoy Conrad's drumming, go out there. Check out these bands, Bob Schneider, Ian McLaughlin, The Bump Band, NRBQ.
Johnny, you're the man.
Yeah,
thanks for doing this. Thanks
thank
for
you.
Having me. You're
thanks
great.
For having me. Right. Conrad Chicrone, man, great guy. You know what? That's the first time we ever really got to sit down and talk after knowing each other for more than 20 years. That's pretty awesome. I love doing this show. I love Conrad. He's a great guy. Great, great, great drummer, man. Get out there, see what he does, hear what he does. Love music. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Rate us and leave a comment. Helps us. Keeps this show. We'll keep this show free for you once we start getting advertising, okay? Thank you so much. You can follow me on Twitter at Johnny Gowdy. You can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Here's some music from Earth Pig. Earth Pig and Fire. Yeah, the great Adam Bork. And thanks to Conrad again for coming by, and thank you for listening. You're great people. Let's get down.
drinks me.